All right. We left off yesterday, and we were up to Chatzitzin. Okay? Chatzitzin de Oraisa. So, Avi, can I impose upon you?
Sure.
Okay. Vav Amud Aleph. 8 lines from the bottom, or 9 lines from the bottom. 8 or 9.
Chatzitzin de Oraisa de.
So when the Gemara says, we did this before, but I didn't comment. When it says Chatzitzin Doraisa Ninu, what's the question? No, that's not the question. What's the question of Chatzitzin Doraisa Ninu? Chatzitzin Armi Doraisa. So what's the Gemara say?
Where?
Morning. As opposed to Halacha L'Moshe Mi'Sinai. Okay, so I want to take a few minutes to comment on this. See, Avi, you got started 3 words, and now I'm going to go full tangent. Because this is actually a very, very important issue. If you took Intro to Bible with me, how many of you took Intro with me? Anybody here? So then you've heard this before, it's Chazara. If you haven't, it's probably the first time you're hearing it. I learned this from Rosh Hechter many, many eons ago, my first semester in this year, in 1988, in spring 1988. And he mentioned the Rambam in his introduction to the Perush HaMishnayos says that there are 5 kinds of categories of Torah Shebal Peh. 3 of them are d'oraisa, 2 of them are d'rabbanan. I'm not sure I know what the difference between the 2 d'rabbanans are, but I'm less interested in the d'rabbanans for the moment. What is most interesting first is the Rambam's theory of the 3 categories d'oraisa. Understand what's motivating the Rambam. The Gaonim, as a general rule, assumed that the existence of machlokas was the product of forgetting, of failure to learn, of persecution that made it difficult to learn. In the words of Rav Shrira Gaon in his famous Igeres, which you should know about, I'll take care of more in a moment, Vahava Shmada, there was a Shmad. And people didn't learn properly. The Igeres of Rav Shrira Gaon, by the way, you should be aware, is very important. It's the first, probably, attempt at what I call rabbinic historiography, first or second, about the history of rabbinic literature. Rav Shrira Gaon was asked by the people of Kairouan, in, I believe, Tunisia, who were engaged in polemics with the Karaites about the origin of rabbinic literature. And the Gaonim, whether because they believed it, but for polemical purposes, because of both, the Gaonim adopted the position that the Mishnah and everything in the Mishnah was very early, and Machlokas emerged because people forgot. And basically, that's why, I mean, there is a, what is the observed phenomenon in the Mishnah? The observed phenomenon is that the earlier generations, to the extent that we have any names, there was essentially no machlokas. Whereas the later generations, there's lots of machlokas. So there really are 2 ways of understanding that. The Gaonic position was that earlier on, there was no machlokas, and then people forgot the dinim, and people weren't able to learn properly because the persecutions, because the Churban HaMikdash, because the Hadrianic persecutions, Beitar, etc., etc. And that's why we have so much machlokas. The Rambam, in his introduction to the Perush HaMishnayos, takes issue with that in a extremely, extremely acerbic manner. He believes that that is essentially matil dofi in the Mesorah, and the Rambam claims that chas v'shalom. Anytime you find the machlokas about something, the Rambam says it can't be Mesorah, it's not something that was forgotten, but rather it was something that was new. So now let me explain. The Rambam says that there are 3 kinds of categories of Torah Shebal Peh, which are midoraisa. Category number 1 are things that are halacha l'moshe mi'sinai. Halacha l'moshe mi'sinai means that the halacha that was transmitted has no connection to Scripture at all. It stands independent of Scripture. It's not hinted to in Scripture, at least not in principle, not a real drasha. It's typically not explaining Scripture either. It simply stands alone. Lavud, take that as an example. The notion that when you have a gap in a wall that's less than 3 tvachim, we view it as closed. Right? That doesn't explain a pasuk. It's not based on a pasuk. It's an independent din. The Rambam says you'll never find machlokas by Allah l'moshe mi'sinai. There's a problem with that empirically, but let's leave that aside. The second category of dinim d'oraisa are things that Moshe Rabbeinu received at Sinai also, just like halach l'moshe mi'sinai, which are peirushim hamekubalim. They are received interpretations of psukim. So Aaron Masechta furnishes a wonderful example, says the Rambam, which is pre Eitz Hadar is in Esro. The Rambam says, if you look in the Gemara, you may find multiple ways in which we know that pre Eitz Hadar is in Esro, but nobody debates the fact that pre Eitz Hadar is in Esro. Right? It might be pre-Hadar bin Lanu Mishan Lashana, it might be pre-Hudar, Hagadal al Komayim, it might be whatever the other drashas were, but it might be, you know, pre-She'etzo, Tametzo, Pir Shaveh, but nobody says that a Prietz Hadar is an orange, or an apple, or a pomegranate. Nobody says that. Everybody knows it's an Esrog. So there, the Peirush of Prietz Hadar is Mekubal, and they're only debating, is there a way to prove it, how do we know it, and so on and so forth. But the real answer is it's a tradition. Or the Rambam says, Ayin Tachas Ayin. If you look at the Gemara in HaChovel, the 8th Perek of Baba Kama, in the opening sugya, the Gemara wants to know, how do you know that Ayin Tachas Ayin is Mamon and not Mamish? And the Gemara quotes 6, 7, 8 different drushas. It likes this one, it doesn't like that one. This is how you know, maybe you can't learn. But nobody says Ayin Tachas Ayin is literal. Nobody says that. So the Rambam says, because the Peirush was Nekuval. So that's the second category. And the Rambam says, you'll never find Machlokas there as well. But let me emphasize something. By definition, you'll never find machlokas. You know why? Because if you found a machlokas there, you know what the Rambam would say? It doesn't belong to that category. We don't. The Gemara never identifies something as a peirush hamekubal. But rather, it might have something that nobody argues about. Then maybe even there are multiple derivations, but all point to the same known fact. So the Rambam says that there's a peirush hamekubalim, and you never find machlokas by them. If you do find machlokas by a din d'oraisa, the Rambam says it belongs to the third category, which is dvarim shotziu min hamikra b'derech hasvara, or with one of the midos haTorah nedrashas bahen. In other words, it's like constitutional law. The Constitution is a written text. There are ways of interpreting the Constitution, and when a Supreme Court issues a new ruling about a case that never came up before, that's a new din. That's dvarim shotziu b'derech hasvara. The equivalent, by the way, of Peirush HaMekubal is probably English common law, for those who know constitutional law. The default interpretation, I'm told, I don't know expert, but my brother-in-law, who is much more of an expert, tells me that the default way of interpreting the Constitution in the absence of other evidence is supposed to be English common law. So that's like Peirush HaMekubalim. But new things are Dvarim Shotziu B'Derech HaSvara, and the Rambam says that's where you find Machlokas. But the Rambam has to explain why is it, you know, that Machlokas explodes in the later generations of the Mishnah. So the Rambam says the following. He says in the earlier generations, they might have had new dinim, but they knew how to function as a court. And what happens when there was a dispute on the court? They would take a vote. And how would they decide? Majority rule. However, the Braisa says, Misharabu Talmidei Shammai V'Hillel Shel Shimshu Kol Tzarkon, Rav Samach Lokis B'Yisrael V'Nasa Torah K'Shtei Soros. It's a Tosefta in Sanhedrin, I think a Tosefta maybe in Sukkah, or Rosh Hashanah, I don't remember, it's a couple places. And that Braisa, which the Gaonim understood in one way, Shaloshimshu called Sarkon, because they were busy being chased by the Romans, so they couldn't learn enough, as opposed to the Rambam, that they didn't behave properly, they didn't come to a vote and say, majority rules, that's when Machlokes exploded. So, but the Rambam says, if you find Machlokes by something, that's a Simon Mufak, that it is not Misinai. Now, what it means for the Rambam is that there are, fundamentally speaking, two sources in Torah Shebaal Peh, Sinai and later. Sinai means the things Moshe was given, which are Halacha LaMoshe Misinai and Peirush HaMekubalim, categories 1 and 2, and things that aren't Misinai, even though they are Midoraisa. The Rambam may sometimes, not in that context in Peirush HaMishnayis, but whenever the Rambam uses Divrei Sofrim for Din D'oraisa, that almost certainly belongs to category 3. In other words, there may be things that are post-Sinai that there's no Machlokas about. But the Rambam would say there's nothing from Sinai that there is Machlokas about. Okay. Now, one point about the Rambam. Now, this is what the Rambam lays out in full detail in the Hakdamah of the Peirush HaMishnayis. Please note that there's one important category that's missing, and there's a reason why it's missing. What category from Torah Shebaal Peh is missing in the Rambam's construction? No. Those are used for Dvarim Shotziu B'Derech HaSvara. What's missing? What? No. Agada. Agada's not there. Not going to talk about that now, but the Rambam obviously belongs to a certain tradition of Agada, which would explain why he doesn't really count that as part of Torah Shebaal Peh in that sense. Fine. Now, the basis for the Rambam, he doesn't really quote sources in Chazal, but there's actually a very strong evidence to this. It's in the Sugya of Zakin Mamre. If you look in the Sugya of Zakin Mamre in Sanhedrin at the end of the 10th parak in the Bavli. It's the, I think it's the 11th parak of Mishnayis. But in the Bavli, what? I think it's the end of the 10th parak, and not the 9th. I think the end of the 10th. So there, the Gemara talks about the following question. When a Zakin Mamre argues on the Beis Din, does it matter whether or not what the source of their law is? Because, and the Gemara talks about two things, Shmua and Svara. What's a Shmua?
I think that's a top.
What? Yes, a Shmua is a received tradition. Rabbi Lezer says, Shamati, it doesn't mean he was hanging under this medrash, he heard guys talking. It means he has a Kabbalah from his Rebbe. That's what a Shmuat in its original meaning is. Later it may sort of take on a broader meaning. But the original meaning is Shmua, and the other thing is Svara. So it's clear that the Gemara recognizes that there are two categories of dinim that are Doraisa. One is Svara, and one is Shmua. So that's the basis for the Rambam. So, when the Gemara says here, Halach l'moshir Sinai, Doraisa in whom, it means it's rooted in the pasuk. Halach l'moshir Sinai is also midoraisa. What's the difference? And there's no difference in din per se. It's just that one of them is rooted in the pasuk and one is not. We said shiur nechatzitzin mechitzin halach l'moshir Sinai. The Gemara says, what do you mean halach l'moshir Sinai? It's in the pasukim, midoraisa. That was what the Gemara's question was. Anyway, those are basically both the Rambam and the Gaonim represent the sort of two major theories, what I would call of Dorash Baal Peh, of the development or non-development. The Rambam is the one that is much more appealing to me from an intuitive perspective, that legal systems do develop. It's almost a necessity. It also would solve a lot of the problems that one might theoretically encounter in studying the history of the Jews in the Second Temple period, and lots of interesting things that go on, and different halachas might more readily be explained by the fact that halacha, in fact, develops. When Rav Schechter quoted this to us, he made a comment, I assume was in this context. If you look in the Book of the Maccabees, so you discover that the Greeks figured out a great trick. You know what the trick they figured out was? They would wait till Shabbos to fight, and the Hasidim would not fight, and they would slaughter them. So Judah the Maccabee and his brothers decided that the only way they could do this was to fight on Shabbos. So Rav Schechter describes that, was that the Sanhedrin at that time sat down and said, this can't be, and they looking through the Pesukim, and they figured out, they found the Hetar for Pikuach Nefesh on Shabbos. Right? But what that means, I'm not sure I think that's true historically. I'm not making a comment on that. I mean, it's hard to believe they didn't fight war before that on Shabbos. There is a separate drasha, by the way, of Shammai, the Gemara quotes in the first parak in Shabbos. Ad ridita, afilu b'Shabbos. But leaving that aside, it would mean then that before that generation, they didn't have a heter, pikuach nefesh on Shabbos. And yet after that generation, they did. So what gives? The answer is, Torah Shebaal Peh allows for the development of new things. And that is why the Rambam spells this out in the Hakdamah to the Perek HaMishnayos. If you read carefully Hilchos Mamrim, in the first parak, you will see the three categories of Doraisa. And, very significantly, why is it that Tanaim, Amoraim, don't argue on Tanaim? What? So the Kesef Mishnah, in the beginning of the second parak of Hilchos Mamrim, the Rambam says the following. Even though, when it comes to Gzeiros the Rabbanon, we know that in order for a Beis Din to overturn an earlier Beis Din Gzeira, what does it have to be? Gadol b'chachma v'minyan, however you work out the details. Nonetheless, the Rambam says that when it comes to Dinim Doraisa, meaning Category 3, any Beis Din can overturn the interpretation of a previous Beis Din. Because that's what the Torah means when it says, Ve'el ha-shofet asher yeh b'yamamahim. There's something deeply ironic about that. By dinim d'rabbanan, but they may not be able to overturn things, but by interpretations d'oraisa, they can. That is, by the way, what gives Torah Shebaal Peh fundamentally its dynamism. That's what makes it a living Torah. But anyway, the Kesef Mishnah asked the question, and then why couldn't the Amoraim argue on the Tanaim? So the Kesef Mishnah says, they just agreed not to. That was the deal. That was they accepted upon themselves not talking, not because they couldn't. And he says, the same thing is true today with us and the Bavli. Klal Yisrael accepted it, and nobody can argue on it. Okay, so that's enough said on Torah Shebaal Peh. So now let's come back to, that is something you should sort of really get that solidly. There was an interesting discussion that took place between Rabbi Clapper and myself. I don't remember exactly what happened in that discussion. It was at Mount Sinai. It's probably recorded online. So if you want to hear more discussion and some other issues discussed about that, we discussed some things. I don't remember anymore. Were you there? You were probably there, no?
I wasn't there.
No.
You said many interesting things about your bonds, but not so much about this stuff.
Oh, okay. So we didn't talk. I don't remember. Okay, so you remember. Right. So the bigger practical question is there any way about dealing with Xeris Rabbanan? That's the whole question.
Yeah.
That's the more practical question, but the much larger theoretical point is the Din D'oraisa issue. Okay, so there's more. Yesh l'ayinot. Fine. Continue. Dechsiv, and that's the whole question. Dechsiv. All right, so here is a question of what the Gir says, which pasuk. Rashi actually goes out of his way to comment. Rashi says, V'rachatz bisaro b'mayim. And that, now the pasuk actually is, ignoring the Hagos Fetzin, the pasuk is, V'rachatz es kol bisaro b'mayim. So, it really should be v'rachatz kol b'saro b'mayim, without the S, I think. And the Gemara says, Rachatz bisaro, or kol bisaro bamayim. It has to be bisaro bamayim. So what is the Gemara's drasha based upon? How do you see from this that, and this is actually not insignificant, not just how they see it in the drasha, but what it means. What chatzitza, what's the problem with chatzitza? Yes, no?
It gets in the way of the fact that it's the direct contact.
Hold. First, how do you see it in this pasuk? What is the Gemara saying? Shelo yehi davar chotze itzbein besaro vein amayim. What should the pasuk have said? See, there are two psukim that you could have been, the other pasuk actually, I think, sheds light on what the drasha really is here. The other pasuk is, v'rachatz b'mayim esko besaro v'tamei ar'arav. This is v'rachatz es besaro b'mayim. There's no kol here. V'rachatz es besaro b'mayim. What is the difference in the meaning of those two words? Possibly. V'rachatz b'mayim esko besaro versus v'rachatz es besaro b'mayim v'taher. In other words, al pipshat they might be the same, but there's something the Gemara is doing with this that is different than the other pasuk. let me explain. What is the beis on banayim? There are two ways of reading it. What's the difference possibly between v'rachatz b'mayim es kol b'saro versus v'rachatz es b'saro b'mayim? Correct. The rachatz b'mayim is called b'saro. The mayim is the mechanism. In other words, with water, you bathe your body. And that's what the Gemara... I don't know what the norm is. You have to go back and look at all the psukim and vayikra about this. But what the Gemara is darshaning here is rachatz es b'saro b'mayim. It's almost rachatz es b'saro b'mayim. Basar in the mayim. So, shelo yehidav rachotzeitz bein b'saro... Uvein Hamayim. Alternatively, you could read it in a different way, that the Gemara's Rasha is in the other pasuk. It's Verachatz Bamayim Esko Bisaro, and there's a hefsek in the words between Mayim and Bisaro, namely Esko. Whereas here, Bisaro Bamayim are next to one another. Shaloya He Dovar Chotzeitz Be Bisaro Uvein Hamayim. You like that, Morty, don't you? Yeah, so whatever the Drasha is, so you have to, the Gemara sees something odd in that pasuk. I could see exactly that look. It was like the, oh. So you can't have a chatzitza bein besaro bein amayim. Why? So one, know what you were saying, which is, if there's a chatzitza, it means that part of your basar is not in the mayim. And I don't say that, there's a reason why I say that. Well, because there's something that Rashi says, which is very illuminating, on the next page. Okay, continue. So the Gemara says, no. Not l'shira. Well, yes, I'm saying.
Just back on the drasha.
Yes.
Could it be that rachat at kol basar b'mayim means that the din is a rachitza of kol basar?
No, because the Gemara hasn't used, firstly, if this is the pasuk we think is, it's rachat es b'saro b'mayim. It doesn't say kol in this one. Hagos Tzionim claims that in Pesachim, not in Erev Pesachim, it's the other pasuk. Eskol b'saro. That would have been an argument. But the way Rashi has it, b'saro b'mayim is not, it's not v'rachatz eskol b'saro b'mayim. That pasuk is v'rachatz b'mayim eskol b'saro. That's where the kol is. Here it has to be the pasuk v'rachatz es b'saro b'mayim. So I don't think you have a kol. You have to go through all the pasukim and figure that out. But I think, if you look on the side, for example, he has... And if that's the pasuk, there's no call. Okay, so the Gemara says ki asai hilchasa is lisaro. In other words, the pasuk teaches you chatzitza generally, and now the halacha Moshe Sinai tells you the following din, which is the Amar Rabba Bar Kid Rabba Bar Chana. It's probably Nima. What's a Nima? A hair, a single hair. A nima can be a thread also. Okay? Probably modern Hebrew has such a word, right? A nima, being a thread. Sometimes it's not even a literal thread, a metaphor, like a thread of discussion or something like that. No? What? I'm not so familiar either. You guys spent a year or two learning in yeshiva. I never had that schos. Why didn't you know Bar Hebrew?
Every word we learn in yeshiva, I'm not sure if it's like a yeshiva word or...
Oh, I got it. Okay, fine.
I can't talk to bus drivers, what I learned in yeshiva.
What's that?
I can't talk to bus drivers, what I learned in yeshiva.
All right, gewalt. Okay. Fine. Anyway, go ahead. So Nima Achas.
Nima Achas, Yeshura Futsetzes.
So what's the chatzitza here? What do you do? Pull a hair out. Tie a little knot and pull it tight. And when you pull it tight, what happens?
It makes a knot.
And then that knot, the inside of the knot is not exposed to the water, because a single hair, when you do that, is very tight. That's a chatzitza. Then, the next case is shalosh. If you take, it's a whole discussion in Hilchos Tevila, in Kuftzadi Ches, I think, and you're there. So I don't, you can look at the Beis Yosef, there, all the shittas. But if you take three hairs, a string of three hairs, and you tie them with a knot, that's not chotze. It's why? Because the hairs are thick enough, the three hairs, that you can't get it so tight that water can be nechnas. And the suffix is? Okay, so this din, is that, could be that there's a chatzitza by hair. That's halacha l'Moshe Mi-Sinai, and these are the details of the chatzitza. But the halacha l'Moshe Mi-Sinai is that there is chatzitza by hair. Because without the halacha l'Moshe Mi-Sinai, what would you have said? The chatzitza is only by basar. V'rachatz es bisaro. B'mayim. So the Gemara says, Bisaro also is written in the Torah. S hatofel l'bisaro. S is hatofel l'bisaro. Bisaro is the flesh. S bisaro is l'rabos es haseir. So if that's the case, then halach l'moshe Mi-Sinai can't be there to tell you either that there's a chatzitza by seir. The pasuk tells you that there's a chatzitza by basar. There's chatzitza by seir. So el ki asai hilchasa. So, min haTorah, the halacha is that in order to be a chatzitza, the chatzitza has to cover a majority of, I'm going to leave that blank for the moment, and it has to be something you makpid. What would be something you're not makpid on? Well, if you're a baker, you spend most of the day with dough under your fingernails. You really don't care. At some point, you have to stop caring. Otherwise, you just couldn't be a baker. It just wouldn't work for you, right? If you are if you work in construction, there are lots of times there's dust all over, dirt all over your body. If it bothered you, you couldn't work in construction. At some point, you're not makpid. So min haTorah, the only thing that's chotzeitz is rubo hamakpid. It covers a majority of some part, and you're makpid on it. Okay, but if you're not makpid, and the Gemara will say in a moment. Or if it's on a miut, even though you are makpid, that's not a chatzitza midaraisa. Continue. V'gazru.
V'gazru al rubo she'ena makpid, mishum rubo amakpid. Val miuto amakpid, mishum rubo amakpid.
All right, so but they would go there if either the chatzitza covers a majority of you, or if it is something you makpid on, even though it's a minority, it is chotzeitz. Okay. Now, but not if it is a miut she'eno makpid. And that, in fact, is the din. There's a Ramah that I think is often misunderstood or misquoted. The Mechaber paskins that miut she'eno makpid is not a problem for tefillah. But the Ramah writes that lechatchila you shouldn't be tovo b'davar hachotzitzin. So I believe it's very clear, actually, if you look at the source for the Ramah, you have to study the siman Hilchos Tefillah. The Ramah does not say that midrabanan v'choshesh even for, or lechatchila v'choshesh for miut she'eno makpid. He doesn't say that. The Ramah says that there are some things that when you are wearing them into the mikveh, they're not chotzeitz. The Gemara talks about if a girl, you know, ties her hair in a bow or something like that. Depending on what the material of the bow is, it might or may not be chotzeitz. The Ramah says, l'chatchila, you shouldn't be tovel b'dvarim, even by a davar sheino chotzeitz. Right? In other words, I forget his exact expression, but he's talking about actually having an object on you, which, because the way it sits on you, it's not tight against your body, so the water can get underneath. The Ramah says, l'chatchila, you shouldn't be tovel with those things. He doesn't say that if you have a miut on your skin that you're really not makbid about, that you have to try to remove that anyway. The Ramah doesn't say that. Why is it a chatzitza is a problem? So Rashi writes, Eino makpid alav. Start with rubo. let's read the first, the second and third Rashi's on the page. Go ahead, Avi.
Ruba, ro saro mitzunaf betit, kasher achas.
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 Right, so he says either if a majority of your hair is covered in mud, or if a majority of your hair, I don't know how this happens, it must take forever, unless you only have three hairs on your head. You take each of the hairs and you tie a knot. Right, with that one hair by itself. I mean, that would take forever. Okay. I don't know how that happened, but... So in those cases, if you're makrid min haTorah, it's chotzeitz. And now, notice what Rashi says rov on here. Rov. Sara. Anyone know why that's important? If you read Tosfos, you know why that's important. We'll come back to it. We don't have to right now. The second in Rashi, read the next one.
In makrid alav. Havalei kigufei, hol ve'en sofo litlo ubatzil ligabei v'lochai.
So he says, if you're not makbid, it's like it's part of your body, since you're not going to remove it, and it's batel to it, and therefore it's not a chatzitza. So firstly, you understand here the hesber of why a chatzitza is a problem, and when a chatzitza is not a problem, which is, why is chatzitza a problem?
It's not part of your body.
And therefore, that part of your body it's covering was not in the water. That's what Rashi's explaining here, consistent with I guess what Rashi said earlier. So that's number one. Number two, why is this so important? It's important because take the following case. A woman dyes her hair. Can she go to the mikveh? Does the dye constitute a chatzitza? But it's most of her hair.
Well, she is. But
it's
there for a long time.
Ah, so the two reasons, they just say quotes two reasons on the Rashba why it's not a problem. One answer is because it's really chazusa. It's not there, it's just coloring. I mean, there's no mamashas. Which, I quote you were the one who raised the issue, but somebody, were you here when I did that? Were you here? You were Vanita. So you know, you raised the issue about different kinds of hair dye. Some of them, there's different kinds. But that's one teretz. The other teretz the Rashba gave, which would fit nicely with this Rashi, is that Adarava, and by the case, there are really three categories. There's Rubo HaMachpid, there's Machpid, where you Machpid that it not be there, and you want to remove it. There's Eno Machpid, where you don't care. And then, there's Eno Machpid, when you want it to be there, Bedafka. Not just that you don't want it there, not just that you don't care if it's there, but you Dafka would be upset if it weren't there. Because the whole purpose of the hair dye is that it should be there. Right? It's like, and you want it to stay there. What?
That sounds like it would lead to a ridiculous number of kulas.
Well, no, because...
I want these piercings. I want whatever million things you want.
So if you had a piercing...
I'd rather have my clothing on. I'd rather have clothing than not have clothing. When
do you... No. No, tell me. Do you wear one set of clothing and you decide you're never going to take them off in life?
No.
Okay. Fine. So then you are mocked. You are mocked. That's the point. If you talk about a piercing, by the way, if a woman, let's say, were to have a kind of ring and her intent was to never, ever, ever remove it, it might not be a chatzitza. Right? It's more relevant, let's say you have a filling in your mouth. So firstly, one of the din halachas are, even though you don't have to open your mouth in the mikvah, the mouth is called the beis astarim, it has to be roy l'bias mayim. That's why when you go to the mikvah, maybe not you, but when your wife goes to the mikvah, she's supposed to brush her teeth and floss her teeth because stuff in between the teeth, even though you don't have to open your mouth in the mikvah, it can't be chotzeitz because it's a beis hastarim has to be ra'oi l'bias mayim. There are kulas that we have in the beis hastarim that we don't have in things that are begodloi, but as a matter of principle, it has to be ra'oi l'bias mayim. So, so when you deal with a filling... So the filling is blocking part of your natural tooth. But because the filling is permanent, so it effectively, thinking along the lines of Rashi or even at Rashba, it becomes part of your body. It becomes part of your body. So now, nothing is chotzeitz between you and the water. Because the stuff that, the guf that's on your arm, that you have no intention of removing, you don't care, that's part of your guf. You know, look, your body, do you have to put your bones in the mikveh? Do the bones have to come in contact with water? Is that because it's beis hastarim? It's not called beis hastarim because it's never exposed. The answer is only the epidermis goes in the water. What about the layer below that? Is that because it's based on stone? No, the answer is because this is your body. Anything that the thickness of your skin is your body. So if you have guk on your hand and you always leave it there, you just don't care about it, you don't even notice it. So Rashi would say that guk becomes part of your body. That's like the outer layer of your skin. And if that goes in the mikveh, you're fine. Okay. Now the...
So what if you occasionally, what if you, you're a wormmaker and you eventually, or well, I guess if you cleaned it, then it would...
No, if you're, if at the end of the day you clean it, so then that's called makbid. That's called makbid. There aren't so many things that are eno makbid. Right? If you have a little thing on your back, that's probably, in many cases, really technically eno makbid. Because you actually don't care about it. Why? Because you don't see it. You don't notice it. You wear clothing almost all the time. You just couldn't care. Right? If you saw the same thing on your stomach, you probably want to get it off. Partially because it's accessible. But probably on the back, little speck is not fundamentally should be treated as eno makbid. You just don't care. No?
Just clarifying, when we say something is chotzis, we're talking about like a hair that's not connected.
Correct. Correct. The only time we have such a thing that I know of in Hilchos Tevila where we might be makbid even though something is connected, that's a big chumer the Ramah has. If I'm not mistaken, a woman has to go to the mikveh again if she didn't do this. Yehuda, you know what that is? Morty? What does a woman do before she goes? One of the things that she does before she goes to the mikveh? Cuts her fingernails. So there's a whole discussion about a fingernail that's partially off and partially attached. The Ramah, that's where the real discussion is. The Ramah has a chumrah because eventually they're going to cut the nails. It's only the katzit, so she'd have to cut it now. So anyway, so that's the only time that I'm aware of that something that's actually part of the body constitutes chatzitza. That's why a nazir can have hair as long as he likes. It's not a chatzitza on his tefillin. It's part of his body. Okay, now, the real question though is, how do we calculate rov? It's not a... it could matter, Lemaisa. It doesn't usually come up. But how do you calculate rov? So there are at least four shitas in Rishonim. What does it mean, ruva? Rashi here wrote rov saro. It's not clear what Rashi meant. The Rishonim discussed this. The Tosfos says here, I'll read the Tosfos. Now that would be one huge whopper of a chumra. To say that the kulos by chatzitza, that only rubo or makbid is the raisa, and rubo or makbid is the rabbanon, and only miuto sheino makbid is okay, that applies only by seir, not by basar. By basar, even miuto sheino makbid is chotzeitz. Now it's not clear that that's what Rashi holds, but Rashi did say something about Sarah. So Tosu says, mentions the shita. He doesn't attribute it to Rashi, perhaps because it's not the favorite from Rashi. Ve'kasha l'Rabbeinu Tam. Me'hod amrina b'perek ha'orel. This is such an important Gemara. Nochris me'uberesh and isgaira. You have a non-Jewish woman who is pregnant, and she converts. B'na ein tzarech tefila. Her child doesn't require tefillah. Now there are conceptually, sorry, that's terrible, but I know whenever this is, it's just, I don't do that on purpose, I promise, it's just going to be there. There are two ways of understanding why is it that when a pregnant non-Jewish woman converts, her child does not require tefillah. So one possibility is that the, I would say it fine, so one possibility is that the child, uber yerach imo, he's just a limb of the mother, he's not a life, and which means then really, ein tzarech tefillah, b'nai ein tzarech tefillah, because when he's born, he's Jewish. Right? That's possibility one. And possibility two is, b'nai ein tzarech tefillah, because she had tefillah in utero. So the Gemara immediately asks on this question, on this comment, it says, uparach, amai, why doesn't he require tefillah? V'chitem amishum de Rab Yitzchak, Ha'amar, Rav Yitzchak is our Rav Yitzchak. That a chatzitza is only a chatzitza if it's a rubo ha-makbid. And is the uber makbid on his mother being around him? Not as long as he's an uber. Okay, so, ha'amar, but Gemara says, so what? Ha'amar, Rav Kahano, lo shanu, ela rubo. Avo kulo, chotzeitz. It's one thing to have rubo, sheno makbid. Kulo, sheno makbid? If it's kulo, the child didn't go to the mikveh. It's like going to the mikveh like in a little bubble, an air bubble. Right? You're not not going to the mikveh. You know, going to the ocean in a submersible does not constitute tevila. even though you're very makbid to have a submersible around you. I'm kidding a little bit because it's probably called, probably is, it's called probably Ruvo HaMakbid, but even in Tinsalomer, then it's not Ruvo HaMakbid. So that's not Tevilah. The submersible had Tevilah. You didn't have Tevilah. So the Gemara answers, as the Tosa says, Vahashta, the Adifa Havale Lakshuy. The Gemara should have asked the better Kasha. The Bebasar, that's true by the hair of the fetus, if the fetus has any hair. However, the Bebasar, Afilu Mashahu, Afilu Nimakbik Chotzeitz. So how can you say, how could the Gemara say, oh, how could they talk about Rav Yitzchak's din there if the din, if his whole din only applies by hair, not by basar? And he says on top of that, most of mikvos deals with mikvos, and the last couple of prakim deal with tefila. So Tosa says, they give examples there. For example, al hamirdas, if you have a saddle and there's a dirt stain on it, Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer ad ki isar haitalki is good. More than that, yamakbid it's a chatzitza. Own maisi hasam shel banoim shel tamidei chachamim mitzad echad chotetz v'shel bor mishnei tzadim. What is a chatzitza on a beged? On a talmid chacham, on one side a stain is a chatzitza, even on one side. For a bor, only two sides. You know why? Because if you're a talmid chacham or a ben Torah, you have to walk out dressed properly. You can't walk out with stains on your clothing. So chilul Hashem. If you're in a bor, so then okay. If the stain is on both sides of the beged, that's already a makbid. One side of the beged, not such a big deal. So the Gemara talks about chatzitza by what? The Mishnayos by clothing. Uvizvachim b'sof dam chatas dam al bigdol chotzeitz v'im tabachu eno chotzeitz revav al bigdol chotzeitz v'im mocha revavu eno chotzeitz. If there's blood on your beged, that's a chatzitza to do tefila on the garment. If you're a butcher, you don't care. All your garments have blood on it. It's not a big deal. If there's a fat stain, a revav on your beged, that's a chatzitza. If you're a mocha revav, if that's what you do for your business, every one of your begadim is going to have fat stains, oily fat stains on it. It's not a chatzitza, you're not makbid. So what do you see? You see that chatzitza applies, the dinam chatzitza, dinam hakpada. The dinam hakpada apply even by non-seir. And therefore, basar adam wouldn't be any different. Okay. So, there is a shita that Tosfos claims that's out there, that the whole din, when we talk about rubo, it applies only to seya. The Gaonim held that the din of robe applies both to seya and basar, but it is calculated separately. It means, if you have a robe of your seya covered, that's a chatzitza, even though it's a minority of you totally. If you have a robe of your basar covered, but your seyar is clean, and it's a minority of you totally, but it's a majority of your flesh, it's a chatzitza. That's the shita of the Gaonim. The Me'iri in Erevin has a different version of the Gaonim shita. It's similar to this, that you count seyar and guf, but every limb is separate. And that actually is a big chumer. Why? Because it means if you have a small limb, let's say the last limb of your finger, right? And this finger is covered, berubo, this part of the finger, berubo, with the whatever the Dabra Chotzeitz is, but you don't care about it. So if you count all the basar together, it's a miut. But if you only look at each individual limb, then it's a robe. So the Me'iri, the way he quotes the Shita Saga'onim and Erev and Daf Dalet, the parallel sugya to this, if you look at the Me'iri here, he says, go look in Erev and I explained everything there. So that's the third Shita, that a robe of any Aver and the hair is treated as one Aver. There is a discussion, whose maskana I don't remember, what's the status of the hair here, you know, on your chest? Well, not on your chest would matter, but every makom which is kinos seir, meaning your private areas, wherever you have large conglomerations of hair, is that all hair for the Gaonim? In other words, you count that entire area, or is each one separate? So there's a discussion about that. And the last sheet, which is out of the Rambam, which is that when you calculate rov, you use the entire body, including the hair. There's no distinction between any of them. Okay, so that's a machlokus with the Rambam. Part of the Rambam and the Gaonim, it's not clear where Tosfos comes down on this because Tosfos doesn't talk about the hair and the body separate or together. Tosfos just says that the dinam of Rubo Hamakbid, Rubo Sheno Makbid, Mir Hamakbid, Mir Sheno Makbid only apply also by Basar, not just by Seir. But they don't say if it's in combination or each one calculated separately. Yehuda?
This one is not mine, but I'm supposed to ask it. So what if the person is doing, the mother is doing tefillah while the baby is half born, is doing a child water birth, that gets out of the table.
What did you say, water birth?
Yeah, water birth, the
table.
Something's
in
nothing.
Okay, the person who asked this question was wise because they understood that my response would be, what kind of idiot does Tvila while they're in labor? Okay, so the answer is, the only thing I'm going to say there, I'm still going to respond and say, is that what kind of idiot submerges totally? You know, always telling the woman who's in labor, what do we tell her? Breathe. Breathe. I can't. I'm underwater.
It's a baby.
She finished. She killed two birds with one stone.
But she doesn't have to submerge totally. The baby is underwater still.
What's that?
She doesn't have to submerge totally. The baby is still half underwater.
Yeah, but presumably the other part of... If the baby is being somech upon her, right. If she's the chatzitza to the baby, then the rest of her would have to be underwater also.
Why? Only the part that's around the baby would have to be underwater.
How do you define that? I don't think so. I think she would, in order to claim that the baby, that she is taking care of the baby being underwater, I think she would have to be underwater totally. So, okay. The question, so that's my answer to the question. Maybe it would work, his half and her half, but it has to be all of her.
Look, she also said her head is only underwater and the baby's half out. And then the head gets above water.
I don't know the answer to the question. Okay. Morty?
Brushing your hair to remove knots for Tvila, is that an actual chatzitza?
Yeah, because I think that you could take a poll of the women, but I think they do often regularly comb their hair out why do they comb their hair out?
To get the knots out.
To get the knots out, which means they're makbid. So it's a miur, a makbid.
What are the knots being chotis?
The hair gets knotted. I don't know. It's this, you know, the shaden that go around and they tie your strings into knots and you don't know how it happened because you didn't. You have an extension cord, right? You have a wrap and extension cord, you come back and there are knots in it. It's this little shaden that go around just to annoy you. I think there might be a gemara. They do talk about that. Isn't there something in the Dina Chatzitza? They talk about the shaden. Yeah, they talk. There's a Ramah who quotes something from Ashkenaz that if their people believe that certain kinds of knots in the hair were done by the shaden and it was dangerous to untie them and therefore they're not chotzeitz because you're machbit that they remain tied. Is it Shulchan Aruch? Okay, so that those are the demons that tie my extension cords up. I was wondering, now I know, right? So I don't know how they do it, but they get knotted. And really, it's like the extension cord. The extension cord is normally not chatzitz because it's too thick to be tight. But when you imagine it happens to hair, those knots are really tight. You just don't have hair that's long enough to get knots. We're not zoicha for that. Okay, yeah, if you want, you have to become a nazir. Okay. Yes?
First of all, do we assume that which is part of your body can be chotzeitz to another part of your body?
Yes.
We do. Okay, so hair that's in my head, that could theoretically be a chatzitz.
It's chotzeitz on itself. Let me tell you how you know. This is what you don't do when you go to the mikvah. Because you don't have to open your eyes or open your mouth. But if you go like this, the parts of your lips that normally would be exposed, you can go like this. You won't get water in your mouth, but those parts of the lips are not called basic star. So they actually require bias mayim. If you do that, it's chotzeitz. They tell you not, you don't have to open your eyes under the mikvah, but to close them tightly, there are parts in the eye that are being covered normally from the water that normally wouldn't be covered. So you go with your eyes loosely closed. No?
So Rubo Seyar is a bigger chumra than Rubo Basa?
No, the point is if you say Rubo Seyar, the way Tosis may have read Rashi, or whoever he's quoting, it means that on your basar, everything is a chatzeitza, even a miur chein machbid. And that the kula of miur chein machbid being mutter, and that rubo or machbid is only derabanan, that's only by seyar. That was the first sheet that the Tosis is quoting. Whether it's Rashi or not, we don't know.
So is it your seyar is always chatzeitza? Is your seyar always a chatzeitza?
Everybody, for what? If it's tied up. Not the part of your body that the hair is covering. That's normal. That your hair follicles are at worst based on sternum, if even that. Right? By the way, there are three things. There's makom hagluyim shemaguf. Anybody know where the dinner based on sternum is learned from, or the fact that you don't need mayim in the based on sternum? The pasuk I'm looking for. It's not pshat in the pasuk. V'chol asher yigavo hazav v'yodov lo shafach b'mayim. The zav being shotev yadamayim, netilas shadayim is never mitahor a person. Netilas shadayim is only for the rabbanan purposes. In order to become tahar, when you're really tabe, you have to go to the mikvah. But they learn first, what does it mean with yadav lo shataf b'mayim? Just like yadav is begalai, so to everything is begalai. That's a basis there. Sorry, doesn't require bias mayim. But it does require royal bias mayim. There's a third category. Let's say I swallow a ring. Okay? Or a person gets an implant inside, let's say, their heart. They get, I don't know, is a paste paper installed under the skin? Okay, so you get a pacemaker. So is that a chatzitza? So, well, it's not certainly mako begaboy, but is it beis hastarim? No. Beis hastarim is something that you can get access to opening it yourself, like your mouth, right? But you can close it also. That's a beis hastarim. It's a big discussion in the poskim, and I think it's very clear the difference in a woman between the vagina and the uterus. The vagina is considered beis hastarim. The uterus is not even beis hastarim. It matters because if you're dealing with a device like an IUD, so even if it were to constitute a chatzitza, being inside the uterus, it doesn't have to be, I believe that's what the post can say, it doesn't have to be roi levi esnayim. It wouldn't matter anyway, probably, because it's a miut sheino makbid, because your dafka want it to stay there for a very long period of time. You don't want it to come out. But I don't even think there's a chashash of chatzitza. You know, there's the outside, there's beis hastarim, and then there's betoch gufo. And toch gufo doesn't require even roi levi esnayim. Yes. So the question is that considered beis hastarim and it's not roi levi esnayim? Maybe.
Right. Well, certainly not roi levi esnayim. It's a plug. The whole point is to prevent tears from draining out.
Correct. Right. So I don't know. You have to see. The crucial point is it beis hastarim or is it further in than beis hastarim? That was the question. What?
It's eino makbid. It wants to be there. So why is it wrong?
That's a fair question. I don't know. So you have to look. See, the point is, if it's something that's not permanent, that's a big discussion. Early 20th century, Hartzvi. Who was the author of the Hartzvi? Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank. So he has a tshuva. I'm sure others talk about it also. What about if a person's in a cast? And the cast is going to be on for 3 months. What's the din? Right, because that might be called eino makbid, because you dafka want it there. You don't want to remove it. Okay, so anyway, so that's a little introduction to Hilchos Tevilah. Yes, Morty?
Are there issues with braces?
No. Same. So I think the assumption of braces is that those are eino makbid. You makbid that they be there. So again, in other words, I think the more something you can't remove and you want it there, the more that is considered, you know, eino makbid, and even better than that. Weinreich. Yeah, no, you can have two hairs that are tied together and it tears them apart. It probably rips some of the hair out of your head, too. What? By the way, you can have a chatzitza not just with one hair tied on itself. In other words, if a hair is tied up enough and not, and there's probably oil and dirt or something that's accumulated there, that constitutes a chatzitza. Okay. So anyway, why, by the way, is this Gemara so important? The one that Tosis quotes in Yavamas, because that's a crucial question. What is the stat? What's the maskana of the Gemara? The Gemara's answer, by the way, what's the Gemara's answer to the kasha? Rav Yitzchak was only Rubo, not Kulo. The Gemara's answer is Shani Ubar to Hainu Ravise. That's the normal way an Ubar grows. So the question is, when a woman who's not Jewish converts and then was pregnant and has a baby, is the baby born Jewish or is the baby converted? It could matter for many, many, many reasons, but the most significant reason. The most significant reason is the baby related to the mother? Is it his mother? Because if he's a ger, then the gershin is gayer kikatan shenola dami. And he might not be related to his mother. And the reason why this gemara is particularly important is because it starts to touch on another gemara, which raises the question of what is the who is the mother of a child? The woman who provides the egg or the woman who provides the gestation? Because the Gemara in Yevamos, later, around Kuf or something, says that if a woman like this gives birth to twins, that they are considered an erva, they are an erva to one another, meaning they are brothers from the mother. If they are brothers from the mother, but they are not brothers from the father. So I forgot how you can tell from that Gemara, the Pashtus is, that it's the gestational mother that is the mother of the children. Because if it were, I think it's precisely this question. In other words, if the egg donor is the one who's the mother of the children, then if the child has been formed already, And then the child converts in utero, he should not be related to his mother. If, however, it is the gestational mother and the one who gives birth physically, so then it turns out that, in fact, she is related to them. And that Gemara would seem to prove that it's the gestational mother that does it. Anyway, for another time, we can explore that. I'll give you the Makoros and so on. But that's why that Gemara is so important. Yes?
I don't understand what this rag is, that they are not related to the mother. Let's say the worst-case scenario is they're converted, it's not a chatzitza for some reason, because it's a normal way of doing it, they're converted then, right? Mm-hmm. They're still related to the mother. It's just like you say, a Katan who's born and then converts. The original birth no longer matters. We'll say the same thing here. He's born afterwards.
I'm going to tell you the following. What happens if this woman was, in fact, if you don't assume it's the gestational mother,
yeah.
You assume it's the egg donor. Let's say this Nachris is carrying the eggs of another woman, and they're twins, and they convert. It only works if you say it's the gestational mother, then it all makes sense.
Sure,
you're correct.
That
fine.
How do we say the mother related to the mother?
But that's it's habatali is my point.
What would be the star for they're not being related to the mother?
If you say that they are effect independent entities already, in other words, because it's based upon conception and now they convert, so that's they're just renting a womb. It doesn't really doesn't change their status.
Not related to the mother.
No.
No,
because the whole point is, but that's only if the gestational mother is the mother. If the egg donor is the mother, then it could have been an external egg donor. And now you're not going to tell me that they're related to the egg mother. It's Haba Atalia. It's Haba Atalia. Okay, fine. So you never, it's amazing where you find things that would show up. Okay. Fine. So now we'll continue. So why don't you make a gzeira on the fourth case? So the Gemara's answer is obvious. Yeah. Okay. So as you know, sometimes the Gemara is gozer gzeira gzeira, and the answer to that question is what? When we ask, but it's gzeira gzeira. Kula chad gzeira hi. Okay. Fine. There are some who will try to find a systematic pattern here. I am inclined to think that it is not an ironclad rule, and it's more an after-the-fact rhetorical explanation of the Gemara, which is fine. Not a problem. Okay. How do you know, by the way, you're not allowed to make a gzera l'gzera? Rashi and Beitza, on Daf, Beis Amid Beis, quotes a drasha, Ushmartem es mishmarti, asu mishmeres l'mishmarti, velo mishmeres l'mishmeres. There is no makor that we possess in Chazal for that drasha. It's just Rashi. Rashi might have had it from some Gemara, some Medrash or something. We don't happen to possess it. Okay, continue. So we want to know, what is Mechitza Alach L'Rosh HaMisinai? So that was what we said already, namely for Rabbi Yehuda, that Mechitza is Asar HaTfachim. So now the Gemara says that we flip it on its head, because according to Rabbi Meir, you don't need Halach L'Moshe Misinai. Why not? According to Rabbi Meir, why don't you need Halach L'Moshe Misinai? Yeah. Aron Tisha V'Kaporas Tefa, and the Kruvim was Semchach and Mechan Pehem Ala Kaporas, and therefore, we know Ten Tfachim is Rosh HaSacheres. So Rabbi Meir doesn't need Halach L'Moshe Misinai. Rabbi Meir has a Pasuk, as we learned already. So now the Gemara says,
Yes, I
help us
the good of the love of the dove.
Okay, so we need Halacha L'Moshe Misinai to teach you the din of good, good asik and good achis, and lavud, which we know means you close a gap, and the dofen akuma, which we don't know anything about here. So, fine. Are you guys all dead?
Yeah.
Dofen akuma, which we don't know anything about here. Okay. Spent enough time on it. I'm making up your Chazara questions on that. All right. I want to now really touch upon the one issue that I didn't touch upon at all, to start at least the sugya of pshutei klei eitz. So a little bit of introduction here. If you're interested in getting a little bit of a background to Seder Taros, I would recommend would recommend that you learn, read Kahati's introduction to Meseches Kelim. It will give you a fairly good introduction. And if you want to go a little further, you can learn the first two prakim. The first parak is not is useful in a weird way. It gives you the Eser Milos of Tuma, and then the Eser Places of Kedusha. It's a very interesting parak. And the second parak, though, gives you a lot of the introductory material to rules of Ad Kelim. So let me say a few things about Kelim. What types of Kelim are Mekabel Tuma min HaTorah? So we know listed in the Torah that we have Mikol Kli'etz, Oveget, O'ar, O'sak. Kli'etz, you understand, is a wooden kli. Beget is a garment that a person wears is Mekabel Tuma. Or is a leather, a kli made out of leather, and sak is made out of, we would say sackcloth, I think it's made, Minotza Shel Izib. It's made from like goat hair or something. It's very coarse, a sack. Okay. What else does the Torah mention? Well, the Torah spends a fair amount of ink on one particular type of kli that's not in that list, and that would be a kli cheres, which probably occupies from Perek Gimel to Perek Yud in Meseches Kelim. Why does it take up so much space there? Because pottery was probably the most common kind of kli that the ancients used. Pottery was the cheapest of the kelim. It was the one that was probably, I would imagine, easiest to work with, to manufacture, because you worked with clay. As you can imagine, glass blowing was relatively primitive in the time of Chazal. Clear glass, levana zechuchas, was an extremely a luxury in the time of Chazal. Metal, certainly they did work with, but you look at old metal kelim, they're not quite the same as contemporary, the machining of contemporary metal vessels. And other things were also not necessarily as easy to work with or as plentiful or readily available as clay, which you made into pottery. So cheres is one category, not in that list. And then the other one is mateches. What constitutes metal? So, are any chemistry majors here? It has nothing to do with the periodic table. What constitutes a metal in halacha? So there may be a machlokas here, but there is definitely a shita, they attribute it to the Gra, that there are only seven things that qualify, six or seven things that qualify as metal. There are only seven metals mentioned in Tanakh. Anyone know what the seven metals are?
Gold, silver, copper, iron, tin, bronze.
Now, bronze is an alloy. Lead. Those six. There's one more. It's not mentioned in the Torah. It wasn't actually, I don't know if it was, it was not used as a metal. It was used as a powder, as eyeshadow. Puch, which is antimony. Now, there is a shita that only the six metals are seven. I don't know if they count the seven, are mekabel tuma, which means, very important, that aluminum and titanium are not mekabel tuma. That is not an insignificant point. Why? Because the rule is that anything that is mekabel tuma is not chotzeitz b'fnei hatuma. So if I have a house, if I build a little structure here, and I have let's say four stones in the corner, each corner, and then I put a wooden board on top, and then there's a mace under the wooden board, and then we dance the kazatska on top of the wooden board, am I tame or not? Assuming there was a tefach space between the mace and the board. If the board is mekabel tuma, it is spreads out the tuma underneath it, and then all the tuma goes all the way up throughout the whole board, and I'm tame. If the board, assuming it's solid, fixed down, it's not moving, if the board is fixed, and it's not mekabel tuma, then it is chotzeitz, it spreads the tuma underneath, and it's chotzeitz b'fnei tuma. So if I take a metal sheet and I do it with that, it would depend upon whether or not the metal is mekabel tuma. This theoretically could matter very, very much in an airplane. I don't know what it is today, but 15 years ago, at least the primary elements in airplanes were aluminum, titanium, and steel. The rivets, I think, are titanium, which is important because that's a Dabar HaMaimon. I believe that most of the metal is actually aluminum. That may sound strange to you, but would you rather fly in a steel can or an aluminum can in the sky? And the answer is you'd much rather fly in an aluminum can. Aluminum is much stronger than steel. much greater tensile strength. The reason why you think it is nothing is because they make soda cans, which are paper thin. But if you made aluminum the thickness of steel, I believe it's stronger than steel. So you have to know, in terms of one issue within the tuma in a plane and mace and so on, depends upon whether or not a plane is makabel tuma or not. Yes?
Which way do we want it to be, but to not be, or to protect against graveyards,
example? You want it to be not makabel tuma. Yeah, there are other issues involved as well.
Plastic's even better.
Plastic might be even better, yes. Yes.
Some of the newer plane models, I think, use cardboard.
But I said, I purposely said, you know, 15 years ago, when I first started research this, just on basics, when I was talking about this particular issue, so that was the issue then.
Also, the other question is, would this apply to Tuvila, too?
Ah, that's the other place that matters. If you tovel an aluminum kli, you certainly don't make a bracha on it. Okay. Now.
It would be like zechuchas.
Chas v'chalila. Zechuchas, you make a bracha on. Feirish. There are signs that hang in mikvahs that are simply v'taos. They say you don't make a bracha on glass. W-O-R-N-G. Wrong. But glass, even if tfilas kelim is doraisa, which is not clear, tfilas kleis chuchas is only derabanan.
So why?
But you absolutely make a...
Reason?
What's that? Correct. That's all. That's the way it works. I'm not taking a stance to understand this is a machlokas about the status of aluminum. So you have metal, you have cheres, and then you have kleitz, etzem, or sap. What?
An
so 1 second. So no. So there are things that are not makabel tumah minator, but are makabel tumah drabanan, namely zechuchas. Zechuchas has a hybrid din of glass and earthenware. You know why? It's partially like glass, or like metal and earthenware. Glass is treated in some ways like metal because you can melt it down and refashion it. It is treated partially like cheres because it's made of dirt. Briyasa menachol. Anyway, then there are kelim that are not makabel tuma at all, which the archaeologists, of course, encounter regularly, particularly one kind, because A, it doesn't rot away, and B, because it was common because the Kohanim liked using them, and that is clay oven. It's actually clay glodim, clay avanim, and clay adama are the three categories of kelim that, for the purposes of Tumah V'Tahara, are not makabel tuma. Clay avanim are stoneware, except for not stoneware like they sell in the camp, not stoneware that you buy in the store, which is really pottery, but actual made of stone. Clay glolim is made of dung, animal dung that might have been baked. I know, you can't think of what you're eating off of dung, but no, if it was baked. And then finally, clay adama is unbaked earthenware. If you bake it, it's called cheres. Those are the three kinds of kelim that are not makabel tuma at all. So they are not at all. So chuchas is the rabbanon, and metal, earthenware, and then wood, and then the organic ones: the wood, the clothing, the sock, and the I don't know what else I left off, and the hide, or are makabel tuma. Fine. Some very basics about these kelim. All kelim, in order to be mekabel tuma, have to be mekabel. They have to have a toch, with one exception: metal. Pshute. The term is pshute clay matros versus things that are mekabel but have a base kibul. Pshute clay matros are mitame min haTorah. A sword is mitame midaraisa. A fork is mitame midaraisa. A knife is mitame midaraisa. A spoon is obviously mitame midaraisa because a spoon has a toch. But if you have a wooden knife where the blade is wood somehow, as Tosus will talk about, or a wooden fork which has no toch, then we have to talk about that, but the Rambam assumes, most Rishonim assume, it's not mekabel tuma min haTorah. For a kli eitz, or an oar, or a sock, any of those things to be mekabel tuma, they have to have a base kibul. Cheres also has to have something called a toch. It's not entirely clear whether a toch and a base kibul are exactly the same, but they certainly look a lot. Now, one of the criteria that is required specifically by beged or sock and eitz is that in order to be mekabel tuma, it cannot be super large. Why? If you saw Tosos, they learn from sock that just as a sock is mitaltel mole verekon, a sack is something that can be moved when empty and when full. How do you know that that's true? How do you know? Morty? Because it's made to carry stuff. So you don't make a sock that's so large that you can't carry stuff in it. So those things, if they are hold more than 40 sa'ah, it is called a kli habav amida, and it is not mekabel tumah. That, I believe, does not apply by metal, I'm pretty sure. I'm not sure it applies by cheres either. Cheres might be a discussion. Clay cheres have a few very unusual dinim. Number one, a clay cheres cannot be purified in a mikvah. All other kalim, with one very odd exception, which actually comes up at the end of the first parak in Sukkah, all other kalim are mekabel tuma, and they have tahara in a mikvah, if you're able to submerge them. Just not cheres. What do you do with cheres? You break it. When you break it, it's no longer metame. It's also no longer a kli. That's the din. Important rule in tuma v'tahara. It's buried in a gemara in Erevin on the last daf. Anything which has no tahara in a mikvah cannot become an ava tuma. What has no tahara in a mikvah? In a mikveh, be correct. I should change the name of our Tamil institution, Tina. Tell them it should be the Tinek Mikveh Association. Okay? What does not have tahara in a mikveh? Plecheres, ochlim, and mashkin. And they can therefore never become anything higher than a rishon l'tuma. There's only one of those three things, under certain circumstances, can be purified, but it's not through tefillah and a mikveh, and that is water. Water cannot be purified through tefillah, but it can be purified through zriah, or sometimes called hashaka. If you touch the water, if you submerge the water in a kli into the mikveh, and it connects to the mikveh waters, it's now part of the mikveh, it's tar, even when you take it out, even though you have very little interchange of the water. It's called zriah or hashaka. Fine. Another odd thing about klei cheres. If you have a klei cheres, and we're not under a roof, we're on the open field, and 100 dead bodies touch the outside of the klei cheres, the din is, the klei cheres is tahar. However, if you take a sheretz, and you hang it in the airspace of the klei, inside, and you don't even touch the klei is tameh. It's a gzeres hakasov, that a klei cheres is mekabel tumah, only mitoho, and even me'avira. Yes.
So if you like point the klei like this, the dead body, it becomes tameh?
If you what?
You have your klei, and you point it, the dead body on the floor, is it tameh?
No, the body has to be inside the airspace.
It has to be inside. You can't touch it, it has to be inside the airspace.
It has to be inside the airspace of the car.
Not allowed to make it.
What's that?
Not allowed to make
it. Oh, so the truth is that would be metame anyway, we did ohel. But let's say you had something that wasn't metame ball, only b'maga b'masa. You had etzen kisora. So if you lower an etzen kisora into the barrel, right, then it would be mitame everything in there, even though it didn't touch it. Whereas if you touch it to the outside of the kli, then it's tahor. Okay. So now the question that's going... So that's basically... That's the Mishnah's term is pshutehen and mikablehen. When you talk about a material, kli eitz, pshutehen and mikablehen. Pshutehen means they're pashut versions. Straight, which means no toch, no base kibul. And mikablehen means those things that are mikabel stuff. So the question that we are going to explore in Tosfos... that we are going to explore in Tosfos is, what is the din of pshutei klei eitz? Are they metame under any circumstances? If you learn the Mishnah and Kalim, the Mishnah says straight up that pshutei klei eitz are not metame. They don't become tame. However, there are a number of different gemaras and different sugyas that raise the possibility of pshutei klei eitz, or of klei eitz, let's say, being mekabel tuma either midrabana or maybe even midaraisa. There's only one clear case. Only one clear case that pshutei klei eitz are mekabel tuma min haTorah, and that is, I mentioned it yesterday in Shir, I believe. When are pshutei klei eitz mekabel tuma min haTorah? Either yesterday or Monday I mentioned it. Tumas midras. If you have a chair which is straight, there's no indentation, that it's not, but no base people. So we assume it's mekabel tumas midras ben haTorah. There is a me'iri in, I think, Erevin, who quotes a shita who says that tumah is only the rabbanon. I find that hard to believe. the Miri is a little bit ambiguous, but it seems the best reading of the Miri is such. There is such a shita. I find that hard to imagine. But certainly, outside of that, for something that's not roi in the midrash, that's not used to support a person's weight, it's not a chair, it's not a bed, it's not a, I don't know, whatever else, you name it. So then, whether or not that's mekabel tumah min haTorah ever, or midrabanan, or not at all, that's the issue that exercises Tosfos. That's what gets Tosfos all worked up. So I'm going to stop here, but this is what I want you to do for tomorrow. I would like you to, when you go through, there are a couple of parts in this Tosfos. There's one part in particular that's very, very hard. I'm not even sure exactly what Tosfos is driving at. I'll tell you where it is. It's just make a mental note of this. It's about seven lines down. I'm sorry, no, not seven. 1 second. Yeah.
Which Tosfos is
this? This is the big Tosfos on Hayyam and Aleph. It's a very difficult, but you can put that, even if you struggle over that, I want you to figure out, your job is the following, when you work in Seder tomorrow, I'll be around, I want you to figure out what are all the data points that Tosfos has to put together. I want you to identify every Gemara, every piece of the puzzle, and what is the implication of that Gemara on its own. And then based upon the solution or solutions that Tosfos eventually proffers, how do you deal with each of those pieces? Right? Because your solution has to solve every piece of the puzzle. So the Gemara Menachos is mashma one thing, and the Gemara Bechoris is mashma another thing, and the Gemara here is mashma something, and the Gemara Rabbasa is mashma a third thing. And the question is, what is each one? What are each of the Gemaras? What is the mashmas of each one? And then according to the final, you know, the way that Tosfos finally solves the problem, whatever his structure of a Tumas Kelim Kleates, a Pshute Kleates, so how does Tosfos, for each any answer given by any Rishon, how do they read each particular Gemara? Right? This is, you want to put yourself in the mind, you want to throw yourself into the mind of Tosfos. How is Tosfos, what are his puzzle pieces, and how do the pieces fit together? So we will begin with that tomorrow in Shir.